RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Our listeners are familiar with the shoreline adaptation plan idea or concept. We've talked about it already relating to Kapiti and I think in the Hawke's Bay. Now we're going to talk about Auckland Council and its developing shoreline adaptation plan with Ken Turner, master mechanic, Westie soul of the earth. I think I'm allowed to say this now because we're getting to know Ken. And Auckland City Councillor. Ken, welcome back on RCR.
Yeah, thank you for having me again.
Okay, how are the tyres going quickly? Are they still...
another whole story. No, just had
another interview.
Just had a big email, 24 pages of policy they want me to sign to before Tyre Wise will come and take my tyres away, even though we're paying...
24 pages.
Yep.
That's where the money goes. That's where the effort goes.
That's right.
Okay, let's talk about shoreline adaptation and the plan.
Yeah.
So you've been to a couple of public meetings already. Whereabouts?
I've been to several. So back August last year, I went to a one in New Lynn, a very small one at a place called Eco Matters at their headquarters. And then I've been to one in Tauranga, one in Huia, and two out at Piha, and I've been to a couple of pop-in sessions. I was at a pop-in session at Te Atatū on Tuesday.
Okay, well, that's quite a few. So the more recent ones that we know about anyway, that's why we're chatting today. What do you make of the – is there a need, Ken, in your mind, for an adaptation plan for the shoreline? Because this all hinges on whether you believe in a climate crisis, doesn't it?
Well, let's just for a second, those meetings I went to, it's amazing how council's language has morphed in across those meetings. And at the last meeting, they were actually at Piha, where there was 200 people, I would think that many. They were saying things like, you know, we know that that managed retreat is an old-fashioned language, and it's not really what it sounds. So that was interesting. Do I think there's a need for a foreshore adaptation plan? No.
Okay.
I just think there's need for plans to look after our foreshore.
Right. Because I think around Auckland region, there's 3,500 kilometres of shoreline, isn't there? That's quite a bit of shoreline.
Yeah, thereabouts. And it's interesting, that's just another situation where I've had the bureaucrats say, you know, we've got 3,500 kilometres of shoreline. That's as much as from Cape Reinga, that's the distance from Cape Reinga to the Bluff. And, you know, woe is us. Think how much trouble we've got looking after all that. The fact is that when we were seven separate councils, we had the same shoreline. It was just in smaller little pieces, so they couldn't pull that stunt by saying, oh dear, look how big a problem we've got.
Yeah, let's remember that the shoreline distance never changes, maybe over millions of years, right? Okay, it's interesting that you the point you made about the morphing of the language, and shoreline or managed retreat doesn't really mean that. What do they think it means now?
I don't know. It's changing from the public pressure. Certainly, like you said at the beginning, the public have woken up and gone, oh, hang on, what does this actually mean for us? You know, when you've got these three terms that our council's using, you know, they're applying four strategies, basically, and those strategies are... limited intervention, no intervention, limited intervention, hold the line or manage retreat. And then they apply these across, I'm looking at a plan here in front of me as I talk, they apply these across an area. Here I'm looking at Wood Bay, French Bay, Tauranga Beach. And, you know, the strategies are different for each place. So the people are saying, well, hang on, what do you actually mean by that? That term. And, you know, let's take managed retreat. What are we managing? What are we retreating from? I'm questioning whether it's Mother Nature or hard work and cost.
Yeah, because for a retreat, if it's Mother Nature, something has to be coming at you, that you've got to retreat back from, and that's sea level rise. Could only be one thing.
Well, at Piha, the people are quite bemused, and rightly so, because there's a sand accretion happening there. You know, it's supposed to be a sand slug that's moving up the coast because of the last Kalpo eruption 1,800 years ago, we were told, and that's flushed a whole bunch of silts out into the ocean, and that's now moving up the coast. But my grandpa, my granddad, used to say to me, there was 50 acres of sand on the south head of the Manukau Harbour when he was a young boy, where Maori used to collect kai, and now that's all gone. Now, my father, he used to fish in a launch almost up by where Watapu Lodge is, which is now a kilometre from the sea, and that's where all that sand's gone. Now, in my lifetime, you couldn't walk from Watapu to Kerikeri at all, ever. There was a tunnel that they had a train going through when they were logging. Now you can get from Watapu to Kerikeri at any tide, and we're told that soon you'll be able to get to Piha from here at any tide. So the people are saying, well, hang on for a minute, you've got all these plans with lines all over them saying we're going to retreat. From what? The tide's further away.
Yeah, we had that in Kapiti in Otaki, where a guy was exercised about this issue. And in the time he'd lived there, the sea was like 20 meters further away now with two huge sand dunes in the way. So I guess people aren't able to believe their own eyes anymore.
Yeah. Well, when what you're told to believe is true and what you observe as the truth are totally different, it becomes very unsettling. And see, my little valley I live in here, which is on the Manukau Harbour, but it's the last sort of residential, it's not residential, but where people live, last area where people live before you get to the north head of the Manukau Harbour. I ford every day on my way into town. I ford through a little creek, a proper concrete-made ford, the only public road ford in the Auckland district, and the tide is right there beside it. I'm 67, and it's always been the same. Now, yeah. There's someone said recently in social media in our area, we want to be able to pass on to our descendants good things, you know, something that's not, you know, not bad. But what I inherited from my forebears is nothing like what I live in now. When my forebears came here, they used to come to this valley in a boat. They actually carved the rock, the road along the seashore out of the rock face. They built groins, they built boat ramps, they built wharves. It's not Mother Nature who took away the wharf and the boat ramp, or the wharf and the groins. It's the council. They came and jackhammered them down in the 1980s.
Yeah, people would be wondering if there's a conflict of interest here, because if you're claiming that you know, the foreshore is going to disappear, the sea is coming in, and that there has to be some sort of retreat, when that doesn't happen, let's say, that means you don't have to spend much on any of that foreshore or the amenities around that foreshore. Is that what it means?
Yeah. Well, that's the result of it.
Right. But it saves money. Saves money.
One of the problems with the money is the self-inflicted costs we've got ourselves locked into. So take Piha again, because that's the hot subject at the moment that was, you know, last week's job for me and is on social media at the moment that I'm following and having a few says on. I put up a post of my own.
I've seen it, yep.
Something I didn't put in that post. So the local board in this area has been told that they have to move their public little art gallery out there and the old schoolhouse, and even the fire station has been told, you've got to move because we can't afford the $2 million, council says, to mitigate your flood risk. And you did flood in 23. Yes, they did, but no one got hurt, and it never came back up more than their sort of shins and through the building. The fire brigade didn't actually flood, but it was marooned in a little island. There's a creek behind there. Now, in the Glen Esk Valley, when my forebears logged this area, and what they didn't cut down, they squashed by rolling all the big logs into the rivers, all that activity and flushing the logs out to the ocean and to the mills, I've seen pictures, historic pictures of the area. It was, the stream was a canal. It was deep, straight, and everyone decided, oh, now we'll start building around us. That's good. And now that nature came back and it had a much nicer ambience, that's great. But the river's now got a big S-bend in it behind those buildings. Some people don't want to straighten the creek. Some people don't want an intervention back into nature. So that's, if we were allowed to straighten the creek, the problem would basically go away. Council infilled some land down by the campground, but, you know, it's a human effect, yes, but not climate change as we're being sold it now. In 2018, when that area flooded, a Morfin report was made. Tonkin and Taylor got involved, had all sorts of suggestions and ramifications and remediations. None of them been done. The only thing that's been done is a measuring stick put in the creek and a time-lapse camera put on the bridge.
Okay, well, it's going to stop Mother Nature, isn't it? just say, where is the data coming from, Ken, as you understand it? What are these, well, predictions or scenarios being based on?
Out of the IPCC and out of the UN sort of stuff, all that climate change thing. And that's another thing. The figures are changed all the time. We keep, there's a lack of continuity to councils, the way council approaches each modelling decision or each modelling prediction they're having. And sometimes they use 1.8 degrees, sometimes they use less.
Yeah, because we've heard in the Kapiti scenario, worst case computer modelling was used, which wasn't even approved for policymaking by the body that you just mentioned, yet they still used it because it strengthened the narrative. It pushed the case. And it seemed to be kind of cherry-picking at work, the data.
That's because it doesn't seem to be well-planned and well-thought-through science, and because in a lot of cases the debate seems to be knee-jerk reactionary towards the public pushback in each individual meeting or support, whichever way it goes, it's all quite ad hoc. And so it makes people, you know, is it a conspiracy theory or is it just a cock-up, you know?
Yeah, well, either way, it still has consequences, right? That's the thing.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, and in other places, it's starting to affect limb reports.
Oh, it's...
Viability of insurance, costs to ratepayers, house owners, property owners, and really starts to... A kind of impinge on the concept of what is private property.
It's all part of the natural hazards mapping thing. And, you know, we're going to map landslides, flooding, and there's one other, I forget what the other one was, because I challenged them. We're not going to map a natural hazard to do in Auckland with earthquakes or chances of a volcano. You know, we've got to remember that the first Maori saw Rangitoto come up in a raging hellfire. They didn't.
Yeah, 600 years ago.
Yeah, they didn't retreat. They stayed and fought for the place because of all its other advantages.
Yeah, that's so interesting you say that, yeah.
Is this
a world that people are trying to wrap us in cotton wool, Ken, all the time, you know, and make it all safe?
Well, it's all about risk and liability, that's for sure. And that all turns into a dollar value, and who's the last man standing? And I got to be supportive of council. The problem they have, we have, the bureaucrats have, is we are always the last person standing. So, it's driven from health and safety and the white, you know, all the different events and White Island, Whakaaro being the last one, you know, everyone's got to be kept in cotton wool. And the reality is you can't. So these natural hazard things, they are definitely, there's people already finding they're uninsurable, unmortgageable, and unsaleable.
Yeah.
And all because of a prediction.
Yeah, interesting. You're talking about your forebears rolling huge logs into the stream or whatever, into the water. Boy, they would have a conniption about anyone doing that now, wouldn't they?
and I would too. You know, I look out my window here.
But needs must, and you do what you got to do. I guess.
And that's dead right. So, are we going to put a 20-ton digger in the Piha stream and straighten it and sides and therefore not have to face all the other costs? Look, even in Piha, all the slip material from all around that area has been trucked to Rosedale. In a couple of cases, it was trucked to Hampton Downs. Why Rosedale and Hampton Downs? Because it's considered to have cowry dieback in it, so therefore it might be contaminated. So council has said it has to be treated as though it's an asbestos product. It's got that much contamination. So I've put up on Facebook, I've put up some maps and some proof that we've carted some of this stuff over 100, 200 kilometres return trip, when it could have gone behind those buildings I talked about, been placed there, been compacted, either make a wall to stop the water, what do you call it, a bund, or you could have actually lifted those buildings, which are quite small, up and put them on top of it much more cheaply than the $2 million they're talking about they have to spend to mitigate. It's just rubbish.
Speaking of spending again, I believe that the council has told West Auckland no funds for large engineering interventions if needed as part of this. But
No. You've picked my words out of my thing. What I was looking at there was that while we're in West Auckland being told we have to consider the costs of what large engineering interventions would be, as I say, self-inflicted costs because of our own rules. So we've got these inflated costs, and we're saying we have to balance those between the need and the risk. At the very same time, there is a video on YouTube or a video going around from Ikipunuku where we're spending over $100 million fixing up and making the old tank farm down in the waterfront a most beautiful park. And so I'm just saying, what, is there not sea level rise down there? And there is on West Auckland? Or is there not money in West Auckland, but there is down there? This is the contradictions that makes everyone just go, what the hell's going on?
That Piha meeting, what were the locals saying to you? What was the mood like?
What I'm conveying, you know, there was lots of talk and lots of data and lots of science and predictions. And then at the end, myself and two other politicians who were there were given a chance to sum up. And I listened to the others. Well, I was going to say what I was going to say, but I listened to the others and thought, it's just all data, all, you know, guessing. So I just said, I will be voting to spend our money on common sense actions, not academic pondering. And it has been, it is a long-term problem, 10 years of no maintenance. And I got a good round of clapping.
Yeah, there's been a capture has there by the academic layer, let's say. They've invested heavily in their models and their science and all of that. And it's kind of, they're spellbound by it, are they?
I'll go a little bit more philosophical about life, and I'll say that when I was a kid, the best thing you could do is strap on a sheath knife and head out into the backyard or the bush and make a hut and nail up some things. And these days, I'm thinking of some of my grandkids there, the strongest muscles they've got are in their thumbs as they get that PlayStation. You know, my oldest grandson, he's a good PlayStation man. He's got a little motorbike now. He fell off it the other day and went a cropper and down on the farm. And, oh, boy, that was a shock. Good God, you don't just hit renew life, you know. He didn't get badly hurt, but I thought, you know, he thought I was taking the mickey out of him. I was just saying, good experience, boy, good experience. So what we've got is a society. We've got a bunch of young workers who they just really only know how to do a job behind a desk in front of a screen. And there's a lot of them. And getting people out there with a shovel to modify or rectify the issues in the Piha Creek, it's hard to find people to do that.
Yeah. Take your point. Anything more we need to know about what has happened here, Ken, and what happens next? How does this sort of, any more morphing of language to come or messaging?
Well, as they said, this is a work in progress, but they say this is a living document. And that's the biggest problem. We have predictions on one hand, which are just educated guesses, maybe not even all that educated. And we have a living document on the other hand, which is morphing every day of the week. Where the hell is this going?
Right. Could never stop, right? They could never stop.
And there's nowhere where any person who wants to get a consent to do something or can actually peg into this thing and say, okay, this is what I have to do.
Yeah, because then the game changes again.
Yeah.
And again and again and again.
Again.
And how long is a piece of string? Yeah.
And then we have the problem where they're telling people at these meetings, and I understand what they're saying. They're saying, don't panic about this because this is not a statutory document. So in other words, it doesn't control you. But the law says that once it's made, the council staff have to consider its implications when making decisions. So you have staff that can say, like my very first talk I had with you, no, you can't have a building permit there because you might flood.
Yeah.
But the person cannot grab the policy they're using to make that decision and say, no, your policy doesn't say that because they say, well, it's not statutory. We're just taking it as a guide.
Yeah. And we can do that, and too bad.
Yeah.
Well, not next, that they, please.
Not too bad as in the staff are trying. Not. It's not.
No, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. Too bad.
Not being nasty, but, and also you don't want to be the person that is holding anything, everything goes wrong and it went the other way. That's, you know.
So back at that particular case, so they have to go to a public notification process, which costs $30,000 just to get someone to make a common sense decision.
And who pays? And
the customer pays.
The customer pays, yeah.
And then you can't get a mortgage to raise the money to do it because your house has got this thing on it. You're not insurable, so that's another reason why you can't get a mortgage. You can't sell it. So we're all stuck in limbo land, which is far more dangerous than the weather.
And that could be termed some kind of retreat, ultimately.
Absolutely. Retreating from the impossible. Where to? Where are we retreating to here in Auckland? We're on an isthmus with water and, you know, and we've got making space for water in the middle. And we've got coastal adaptation on the edges. Where are we going?
It's going to get pretty small. Everyone bunched into one tiny little island.
We'll all be camped on the motorway.
Yeah, retreating from reality. How's that from a?
Yeah, that's a good. Yeah, I'm going to remember that.
You can use that one in the next meeting if it comes up. Okay, Ken. Good to catch up with you again. Anything else to say about that? We sort of covered it.
No. I'll come back sometime. Be looking forward to come back sometime.
Okay. Ken Turner, Auckland City Council, thanks for coming back on RCR.
Thank you.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas. From great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more, the RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.